evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and you know this is one of my favorite times of the week because it is our radio show, and hopefully I have my favorite guy here.
No, Don's left. Carolyn, it's me. It's Richard.
Oh, left the building, huh?
Yes.
Oh, my beautiful ones out there, if you get our email, you know that tonight we are going to converse with a wonderful, wonderful naturalist by the name of John Muir. He actually has a stand of redwood trees in California, and he tried to preserve nature's beauty wherever he could, and he was in the forefront of a lot of that. And we did send some information with our email. And if you don't get our email, come to our website, join up, so you get all this great information. If you know how we work, you know that if we put a picture of the individual that we're speaking to in your third eye, and you might not have a good picture of him, and call his name, you will connect with him like Richard does. And if you don't know how to do that yet, Richard does teach this, and he is a master at it. So, Richard, you're going to call forth our beautiful being here and tell us what his energy is like?
I think that's a good idea. I sense a great gentleness about this man. There is this fairly broad energy as I experience him. It's not so powerful, really. The overriding sense I have him is of this gentleness, wisdom, and love. Above all else, they are the things that I feel. Not someone that you might have perhaps expected to be the leader that he proved to be, but he was really, I suspect, driven by the passion that he had for nature and what it represented to him. So gentleness would be the word that would come most strongly. Gentleness, loving, and, as I mentioned, wisdom. These are the threads that I experience from him.
That's beautiful, Richard. Thank you. And I do believe that John Muir would have a message for our audience. What might that be?
Let's see. I appreciate the opportunity to come forth in this manner. I was aware that the two of you had been doing this work, but I never imagined that this opportunity would come my way, though I have been monitoring the two of you, and I was aware of the recent interest that Carolyn has had in these subjects, or indeed an interest she has had for a long time, but it has been refreshed, you might say, due to the soul origin and history reading work that she has been doing, and the fact that I am connected to one of those that requested a reading some time ago, and also connected to an expression of consciousness that came forth from another monad with similar interests to my own. And so I have to admit I took the opportunity to prompt Carolyn to the possibility that I might wish to come forth and speak in this important and precious time. And so I am honored to be here, to be given this opportunity to speak in this manner. You live in a special time in the world. The time that I lived in was one where there were great tracts of nature that were as yet unspoiled, and many of them under great threat. Many of those tracts have since been, you might say, decimated across the world. But I am honored and proud that I was able to influence some of those who could make a difference in regard to some of the great treasures in North America. Some of these are coming under new threats, but in a way I am unconcerned by those threats because I am aware of the time in which you live and the transformation that is emerging upon the planet. It is a great honor to be able to, you might say, span from my time when I was able to do what many would consider pioneering work to see the protection put in place for both the Yosemite area and also the area of the great Sequoia woodland stands. I consider these to be my greatest contribution to not only those in your time, but more importantly, to nature itself. I was brought up in a family that was very religious, you might say very fundamentalist in a religious sense, such that I was taught to understand the Bible in great detail. And yet as I grew beyond this, I released this like it was an old coat, because I knew through the nature of my own being and my connection with nature that opened up so readily like a flower as I grew up, that the nature of God, if you will, the nature of the creator of all, was very different from that which was taught through the Bible. And I understood that that expression of the creator bubbled up through all of nature, not just those in power and authority who might wish to control the rest of humanity through religion, but indeed through every tree, every rock, every insect, every animal. And so it was this understanding that grew within me, and my time in Yosemite really cemented this understanding, because the energies that flowed within the ground in that area were so obvious to me, and they, you might say, really awakened my understanding of these things. And so it was, as I say, a great honor to be able to play my small role in protecting some of these elements and indeed acting as the catalyst for the creation of the Sierra Club, which has gone on to preserve and protect and honor and foster the interest in these wondrous assets, not only of North America, but indeed for the planet itself. And so, as I say, I am honored to come forth in this manner to reinforce the importance of this respect for nature on every level, the wonder that has been brought forth upon this planet for the experience of all, including humanity, and to see the time emerging on the planet when these important elements will be once more respected, and the understanding that all of these things carry their own consciousness will be brought forth in the world once more.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. You mentioned something about energy in Yosemite, and I have personally visited Yosemite, and it is a most magnificent setting. And yes, there is an energy of great peace, of magnificence when you're there. It's quite an unusual place. And so I ask you this, Mr. Muir. Do you know if there are ley lines that run through that valley?
There are ley lines that run through this valley, and I came to understand these energy lines even though I had not been taught about them, because I felt them and I could detect their flow. And indeed, I learned to communicate with the consciousness of them just as you do today. Indeed, I remembered how to communicate with the consciousness of the mountains and the rocks and the streams and the animals and the birds and the insects and, of course, the trees. It was something which opened up as I spent time here, because I came to understand that it was a role that I had come to play, to act as a anchor point, a reminder of some of these important skills and abilities. I know I have answered more than your question, but yes, I was aware of those energy lines.
Can you give us some idea as to where they run? I mean, I suspect that it covers a very wide area. What conclusion did you come from?
There are several sources of energy that are in that area. It is not just one ley line, you might say. The mountains have their own individual energies, as indeed mountains everywhere do. And when you have a structured valley, the mountains in a way cooperate, they communicate, and so you have this compound energy that arises from multiple sources, you might say, that produces this totality of experience. And it is only by spending time there communing in the way that I did that you begin to understand how these elements come together and cooperate. So there were, in fact, many energy sources which contributed to this. Now, the ley lines that you have mentioned run along the valley. It is common for these ley lines, where they are available, to flow along watercourses. And so it is usual for these to flow down the valley, and that indeed is what happens in Yosemite.
Thank you. You probably are aware that this is something that I work with and study, and so I'm very interested in the energies of the earth. Now, from your point of view, do these energies within the earth change the human body in any way? Do they augment the energy fields of the human body?
It is one of the reasons that these energy lines have been placed in the earth. They not only impact humanity, but they also impact the plants and the animals in the areas where they run. And as you know, the energy lines in Europe in particular were placed to be utilized by humanity to awaken aspects of the energetic capability of humanity. And whilst there are not such formal structures, you might say, within North America, these energy lines were well known to the Native American people, and they worked with these. There were particular energy spots where lines crossed, just as they do in Europe, where male and female energy lines would cross, or masculine and feminine, perhaps more appropriately expressed, energy lines crossed, and the Native American Indians would acknowledge these important points. These lines were well known to the ancient peoples prior to what you refer to as the fall of Atlantis. They were well known and understood, and it is why so many ancient structures are placed on these key energy points.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that. I would like to mention to our audience, if you have any questions for Mr. Muir, please send them in. Time passes by so quickly, and as you can tell, he is very knowledgeable from the natural point of view, and I'm sure your questions would be answered in a way that would bring you great joy. Now, I don't know if you have had the opportunity to study this, Mr. Muir, but the energy lines that run through the Earth, and we'll connect it, leave it with Yosemite Valley, do they somehow connect to energy lines in the cosmos?
There are maps, you might say, of energy lines on the Earth that replicate energy patterns in the cosmos. I anticipate you will have heard that expression, as above, so below. And this, in no uncertain terms, applies to these energy lines, in particular the points where these lines cross. And so what you see is, you might say, layers of these patterns. These patterns on the Earth in most cases reflect a constellation in the sky, which in turn reflects a higher level energy pattern. As these things flow down, usually from the center of the cosmos, down to be, you might say, imprinted upon Earth and indeed other planets elsewhere. This is a known and well-utilized process by which energies are transferred into a planet, and through the planet, when they are effectively utilized, into the beings that occupy that planet. And so this applies in many places upon the Earth, and some people have recognized some of these patterns. One that I know you are aware of is how the key Gothic cathedrals in France, beginning in Spain and passing through to Roslin Chapel in Scotland, map that constellation known as Virgo. And this has been recognized by others. There are similar such patterns in Egypt and indeed elsewhere in the world. And so this is a common thing that most of humanity is unaware of. And yet it has been programmed into the planet from its very creation for just these purposes.
That's beautiful. And when human beings learn how to communicate with the consciousness of these energy fields, whether it's in Yosemite Valley or connections to Venus, are they able to tap into a greater form of energy in the cosmos?
This is one of the purposes of these connections, of these maps, is to enable just such capabilities. Firstly, the energies are transferred down to the individual to, you might say, clarify the energy systems of the individual. Again, these have been long forgotten. It was something that I had some, you might say, unconscious awareness of in my lifetime, but it is something that I now understand much more about, and that is the presence and existence of the primary energy chakras in the body and how these can be stimulated by these key energy points. And so this is the first step, you might say, to awaken and condition the energy system of the body. And once this has been done, then they open the door to being able to, what you might consider, travel the cosmos, to send forth through these structures, you might say, through as a result of these energy points, to be able to send forth an aspect of the individual's consciousness to travel the cosmos. This is an extraordinary gift, which was widely utilized in many ways by those beings in that higher level of consciousness that existed upon the planet, but to a large extent has been buried. It was understood to an extent by native peoples across the entire planet, but those forces of so-called Christianity have acted to stamp out those traditions, those understandings, that knowledge, and in so doing, isolate humanity from their true nature and true ability and true heritage, you might say, and impose their will and their control structure between humanity and their heritage.
Thank you. Can you give us some sort of an idea as the role that love plays in all of this?
That is a very broad question. I did not understand it when I was, you might say, present upon the planet. But what I did experience whilst I was on the planet was the power of love by way of the love that opened up within me for nature in particular. You might say, in so many ways, I identified more with nature than with humanity. I just truly loved spending time in nature. And there is a powerful role for love in that relationship with all things created. And as you walk the kind of path that I walked, it was almost as if I spent a great deal of time in a form of meditation as I opened up my ability to communicate with these many forms of consciousness and my understanding of how all these things interacted and how they all came forth, in a sense, as expressions of that prime creator being. And so I came to understand the role of love in connecting things together. What I did not understand in that time was, in truth, how everything really is created from love. It is the primary energy, you might say, from which all arises. And to open up love for oneself and love for nature and one's fellow human beings really is giving life to the fundamental truth of who and what you are and they are. And it is a great gift to give yourself and all expressions of consciousness that you might choose to interact with.
That's beautiful. And I thank you for that. Can you give us a little information with regards to your connection with the Sierra Club? What role you played?
I recognized that there were forces at work that were seeking to plunder, you might say, the great redwood trees of California in particular. And I just knew that they needed to be protected for many reasons. And the selfish agenda, which simply wanted to cut them down for lumber, misunderstood their role and purpose on so many levels. And so I struggled with how to, you might say, galvanize the interests and the forces that would see these protected. And in doing so, I recognized, as I discussed this with some others, that a very powerful way to galvanize these forces would be to set up an organization that was drawn from the general public who aligned themselves with this same desire to see these great trees protected and also to see these parkland areas, if we could get them declared that, to be preserved and utilized in a manner which was a very different application, if you will, of these great treasures than would have been the case if they had simply been used for lumber. And so I, you might say, saw the Sierra Club as being a way to marshal those forces. And indeed it proved to be so and has continued to do so down through time. They became quite quickly a very powerful force that tied together both the public and also some powerful political interests who aligned themselves with the Sierra Club and its agenda and enabled us to be able to protect Yosemite and also the areas of the Sequoia in particular, which were my primary focus. And the Sierra Club has taken on a life of its own, you might say, with groups spread much further afield than just the areas where I was focused upon. And so you might say, in a sense, it was a political tool, though, of course, having others enjoy what I had discovered about these areas was an important aspect of what I was trying to achieve. So a number of us came together to cooperate and participate in the creation of this organization, and I am very proud of all that we were able to achieve in that regard, not only the protection, but also opening up these areas to the use of those who shared that interest, were able to grow that interest to a much higher level than was previously possible.
You are to be congratulated on the wonderful work that you did. We still have those same interests now that wish to plunder the earth. And what do you see in the near future with regards to this, the protection of the earth, peace among humanity? There's a lot of fighting going on right now. So what do you see on the horizon?
There are many threads at work in your world by which I am encouraged. As you perhaps recognize, this desire to plunder the resources of lumber to begin with, but indeed other resources, is driven by the desire to garner or gain money. And indeed, it is the same interests that drive poaching in Africa and so on. And really, it is now emerging in the world the understanding that this money structure is a creation of those who would control humanity, that really this external value, if you will, is a false value. And as that structure is understood and dissolved, this drive to accumulate the basic necessities of life or to accumulate levels of financial strength, which enable individuals to seemingly put themselves above others through what they can possess, these forces will begin to dissolve in your world. And this is a very, very important step that is gathering momentum across the planet. However, this really is a stepping stone to this broader understanding, this broader ability emerging where humanity in general will not be driven, if you will, by the need to spend most of their waking hours working in some employment form, which for the most part they do not enjoy, to garner enough money to buy the necessities of life. This entire construct will be dissolved because humanity will be reawakened to their ability to bring these things forth from the background energy field as they so desire. And in doing this, the whole basis for human life will transform. Humanity will begin to look at the truth of who and what they are, rather than being focused on survival, rather than thinking that having enough money is really the answer, which it is not. It is a distraction from the truth of who and what you are, and it has been intentionally put in your road, as so many other elements have been put in the road of humanity, remembering and connecting with who and what they are. And so you are in that time when those changes are unfolding in your world. And it is not far off, as I see it, where these unfoldings will explode around the planet and cause this great change, this great awakening occur. It is like, from where I see it, these lights are turning on across the planet as a growing number of people become aware of the truth of themselves and aware that this false expression, if you will, of humanity has been created to distract and enslave humanity. And so it is like watching these lights turn on across the planet. And I can assure you the number of lights that are turned on is growing. It is a small percentage as yet, but in line with that notion of the 100th monkey syndrome, you are rapidly approaching that moment of what you might call critical mass, where this will snowball in a manner that is simply unstoppable.
Thank you. Are you familiar with the Giza Plateau on Earth?
I am familiar with the Giza Plateau.
I was wondering what you understand by way of energy in the Giza Plateau and how it might be connected to the other ley lines and other energy sources throughout the planet. Do you have any understanding of that?
It is not something that I am greatly familiar with, though I am aware that there are energy lines, energy patterns, which exist within Egypt. As you may be aware, there was a what you might term an initiation path, which traveled the Nile through a number of temples, which an individual could travel through an initiation process. And this too mapped constellation in the sky. And it also had these temples built on key energy points. And this includes, in particular, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and also some of the ley lines which run through Europe, starting in Ireland or off the coast of Ireland, travel through Europe, through Greece, across to Egypt, and pass through to Israel, connecting these areas of the world where so much of, you might say, the driving force in culture and society from a Western perspective has flowed and been interconnected. And so there are energy lines that travel, as I say, from off the coast of Ireland all the way through that area of Giza and through to Israel.
Thank you so much for sharing your understanding with us in this regard. Now, before we leave, Mr. Muir, is there anything else that you may wish to share with us with regards to anything that we have discussed or something comes to your mind that our audience would want to be interested in?
As I mentioned, there are powerful forces at work still destroying so much of the beautiful natural resources of the planet. The destruction of areas such as the Amazon basin is an example where so much of this is being destroyed for short-term gain, whether it is for limited farming or whether it be for the exploitation of oil. These areas are being destroyed, and it is not just in the Amazon basin. We are also seeing this in areas of Asia, where, for example, much of the rainforest has been destroyed to plant palm oil or some other crop. And so this process is continuing at quite a rate. And on a level, it is concerning, but I would say to you that these forces will rapidly come to an end. And it is a necessity that they do so, because the survival of the planet is dependent upon a fundamental change. And as I indicated, it is simply not possible for this to be done within the current consciousness. It simply cannot happen. For example, there are efforts to eliminate poaching of the wild animals of Africa, and asking the native peoples to, in a sense, give up a source of livelihood when they are struggling, so that there can be animals that remain and that can survive and prosper, is an impossible scenario. It can never occur whilst those people rely on the money-based approach, if you will, for their survival. And this model applies across the planet. Until this monetary-driven consciousness is eradicated from the planet, life as you know it on the planet is at risk. And this understanding needs to flow through humanity, and indeed it will, as these changes come forth. And so in a sense, it was long said that those that are driving this would see themselves on the verge of claiming all that they had labored long and hard for, only to see it snatched from their grasp. And that indeed is what is happening in this time. So I encourage all of you to take heart in this time. Do not be distracted by the fear-mongering, the ones who seem to have everything under their control, the ones who, for example, are driving the prosecution and persecution of individuals like Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden, who have come forth to expose the dark underbelly of the American system. Do not be concerned about the fact that those forces might succeed, because they will not. They will not survive. They will not last for very much longer as these changes come forth. Be optimistic. It is important that you understand what is happening in your world. It is important to understand the levels of manipulation and control that have been unleashed in your world. But also, it is important to recognize the time in which you live, that this time is one of change and transformation, and you will experience it in your lifetime, indeed in your quite near future as these changes flow across the planet, and the nature of life as you know it will be transformed.
That's beautiful and a real sign of hope. And we thank you so much, Mr. Muir, for being here, showing us or sharing with us all of your great understandings. And we are grateful for your generosity. Thank you so much. And we also wish to thank you, Richard, for bringing him forth to communicate with him. And without you, we could not have received this wonderful information.
Thank you, Carolyn. Well, of course, it takes all three of us to do this. So,
I do want to mention, though, what a master you are to teach this. And would you give our listeners an idea of the website that they could go to and learn how to communicate with consciousness of other people and other aspects of consciousness in general?
Yes, the website is called rightbrainmagic.com. And there are details there. There are examples of people working with us doing this work. And also there's the opportunity to arrange a session for yourself doing this work.
It's just amazing who and what you can communicate with when you understand the basics.
Truly. Yes, it's wonderful. It's fun.
It is fun. And so let us talk about some of the other things that we do for people, Richard.
By all means, Carolyn. I think that, as I've said before on these shows, perhaps to me the most amazing thing that we are currently involved in are the soul origin and history readings that you do. I do all the surrounding packaging and all the rest of it, but you do the real work, which is bringing forth the extraordinary information about an individual's monad, the purpose of that monad, in overall terms, what the focus is in relation to Earth usually, perhaps some examples of previous incarnations that have come forth on the planet, and the purpose of the individual in this lifetime. And that information truly is extraordinary. And it's been fascinating sharing these with quite a few people now over time. And quite a few of those are on the website that relates to this, soulorigin.com is that website. And if you haven't been there, and in some cases we have a video, a YouTube example of these, in others just the recording or text available there. But this information really is quite amazing, and the impact of these in many cases on the individuals that have received them is truly quite extraordinary. In some cases, the individual was, in a sense, struggling to understand why they were here and what they were doing, and it's like the pieces slotted into place and made perfect sense. In others, there was great resonance with things that they already understood and were experiencing, and to see these pieces slot in again gave them some far greater context and, you might say, self-trust as a result of this reading. In other cases, it's brought information forth which was quite cathartic for those individuals, where they've been struggling to kind of make sense of their lives in a sense, and these readings brought forth pieces that had them understand why that struggle was in place, and the result was great healing for those people as a result of this understanding coming forth. Often great healing of a deep nature can be cathartic, can be quite challenging as it unfolds, but the outcome is quite, quite powerful. And so these readings have done all these things. And they're just marvelous, Carol, and I honor the work that you do in bringing them forth. So the website where you can find those examples is the soulorigin.com website. And there's other information on that website also, which you might find of interest. There's some information on one of the pages on that site about the difference between the soul and the higher self as they come forth, the reasons that they come forth, the differences that they represent and how they interact and so on. It's quite interesting material that I have never seen or heard in any other place.
Thank you, Richard. One of the things that strikes me, whether what Mr. Muir brought through or the things that you're talking about, the soul origin histories, is the orderliness of everything. And to my point of view, it's one of the things that strikes me. Nothing is haphazard. It's all been planned, and we are all walking a path of the plan. That's the amazing thing to me.
Truly. Truly, yes, there are many levels of plan, you might say, including, of course, the choices that an individual soul makes coming forth into a particular lifetime. It's not that every little minutiae item of a lifetime is planned. It's not like that. But the major elements, if you will, are pre-planned. It's likely that key individuals that you connect with in your life, whether they be a partner for a large part of your life or a small part of your life, or one, or your, in some cases, some of your children or parents, those relationships are chosen before you come, before we come. And so, you know, it's hard to understand these things when we're living this incredibly intense human experience in this moment by moment by moment experience, in these carrying these powerful emotional bodies that are unique in creation. So it is fascinating how detailed the planning really is.
And sometimes you plan with an individual for the sake of healing, and it is one of the reasons why you're facing challenges with a particular individual in your family or friends. And if you understand what is behind all of that, it makes everything so much easier to work with. And when you have a group of people who understand the reason that they came together and what they were called to do, makes makes a very helpful situation for everybody.
Indeed. It's unfortunately the case that most people, when they're in the middle of these things, don't really understand why they brought the experiences for. So often the understanding comes after the events have unfolded. And so often we see situations where individuals have come forth in this lifetime connected with people that have perhaps mistreated them, abused them, even killed them in past lives, and they have come forth again to give them an opportunity to choose a different path. Unfortunately, I have to say, in most cases that I've looked at, they haven't chosen to change their behaviors to any degree. But nevertheless, it is a great gesture on the part of the one who chose to come forth and give them another chance. It is an extraordinary gift that that soul, that individual, indeed that monad, is giving to the other monad, if you like, to change those patterns of behavior and choose differently. And, you know, in ways it's kind of like a last chance almost, given these changes are coming forth, to choose a different path, to heal it within the current consciousness and be able to move on in a positive way.
And sometimes those people who have come to help have been grievously treated in other lifetimes, and yet they come forth in the hope of forgiveness and assistance, no
yes.
matter what the cost has been to them. And we've seen this a lot also.
Indeed we have. Time and time again.
Well, Richard, we have 4 minutes Is there anything else that you might want to bring up that maybe I didn't mention?
Well, I think one of the powerful pieces of work that you do with people is the key past life sessions that you do. And again, there have been some amazing experiences come forth in those where the individual doesn't choose the lifetime, or Carolyn doesn't choose the lifetime, but indeed the individual soul chooses the past life, or the, you might say, other finger of consciousness that has come forth from their monad with which they might connect in this lifetime and to learn from, to in many cases work with after the key past life session, so that they can strengthen skills in this lifetime that they had in that past life. It's quite fascinating how this unfolds, and the gifts, if you will, that the individual so often gives themselves through these sessions. It's truly extraordinary what comes forth in them. I'm a fly on the wall in these sessions, and I'm just fascinated by what unfolds.
Oh, dear. Well, one of the things that I find so fascinating is when you learn how to communicate with consciousness, how you can chat with other people's souls, whether it's a spouse or a friend. You can speak to their soul for advice as to how to work with them.
Indeed. It's something we use in our work quite a lot. Very helpful if you're doing healing work, particularly with someone, to understand the perspective of their soul on how we might proceed to assist them. It's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah, because they'll suggest to us ways that we can work with healing, understanding the challenges that this individual is working through.
Yes.
Well, Richard, we have 2 minutes. Again, I want to thank you for this beautiful work that you have done tonight. And again, thank Mr. Muir. I was fascinated with how he understood and was aware of the energies running through, which we might say ley lines or telluric energies, that he understood that through his observation. I thought it was wonderful.
Indeed. I found it interesting reading a little about him beforehand, how he had that very, you might say, fundamentalist Christian upbringing, and yet transcended that almost without trace. It's like he remembered. I mean, we are aware that he is an aspect of a cherubim monad, and it was just so interesting looking at that life, how that fundamental understanding bubbled up from within him. You know, it's quite fascinating knowing who and what he is, to see that come forth.
That's beautiful, Richard. So we have just seconds, and I want to again thank you, Mr. Muir. I want to thank those that station for taking care of us, fulfilling
our
needs.
And thank you, Carol, for the wonderful work that you do in the face of everything that gets thrown at you. You still keep bouncing up and doing what you intend to do despite it all.
Absolutely. And so we are done for the night. And until next time, check in with us next week. And if you're not on our email list, sign up at one of our sites. Good night for now.
Good night, Carolyn. Good night, everyone.